Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahadiryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navatitamastoma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. So now we're at Mahabharata. Arjuna goes to heaven. Right? And so now he's the chapter 25, Arjuna, the demigods have all come, right? He's gotten the blessings of Shiva, and now then Indra has come, and then all the other demigods have come. So now Yamaraj is offering him weapons. Yamaraj offered him his personal weapon, a celestial mace, to Arjuna. The Pandava received the weapon along with the mantras for hurling and withdrawing it. So in the Vedic thing is you have the weapon itself that can be used as a weapon directly. You know, the bows and arrows, the arrows that work directly, the mace that works directly, or a spear, or like this. But you also have where you can chant mantras, and then they become celestial weapons then. And then they act according to that celestial weapon. They're the carrier for that weapon. It's not that... you know, you can only act as a club. So the club, so he says, for throwing it. Because clubs they would throw, and then by throwing it, it would take on the power of his weapon. Like that. So you have to know how to throw it, and you also have to know how to withdraw it. That's the thing. You have to have the power that you can do both, you know, piety and all that, because Yamaraj means he's a very pious person. And then you have to know the mantras for throwing and hurling. Then it's complete. After that, Varuna gave Arjuna his inescapable Nagapasha nooses, right? They're kind of nooses that are snakes, and then you can tie people up with them, and people can't get out. Arjuna also received Kuvera's weapon, the Antardhana, which could baffle and render unconscious men, even mighty asuras. Antardhana is like an illusory thing, and it completely throws people off. Then Indra spoke, O subduer of enemies, you shall perform a great work for the gods. Now you must descend to heaven. There I'll give you my own weapon and other irresistible astras belonging to the celestials. My chariot, driven by my servant Matali, will soon carry you there. So he's there, and then they're all on the mountaintops, and then they give him all the weapons and that. But Indra said, you come to my place, I'll give you there. Right? Because these others, that's not their place, so... they're already there, and so naturally they would give. If you came, you know, if it was a matter you were going to their place, then they would naturally give in their place. But Indra was there to oversee. You know, he came first and said, you know, that you meet Shiva first, you know, when he came disguised as a brahmana. Then he met Shiva. Then he came with the demigods. Then the Dikpalas, they gave their weapons because they sit in the four directions on the local mountains and control the directions. So three of them have given, right? So Yamaraj and Varuna and and Kuvera. And so Indra is left from the east. So now he'll go to the heavenly planets. The Lokapalas then vanished, leaving Arjuna alone. As he looked up, he saw what appeared to be a second sun gradually increasing in brilliance in the sky. Because from here, when we look up and we see the heavenly planets, we see the persons of the heavenly planets, we see the vimanas or the airplanes of the heavenly planets, they look like stars to us. So then here he's looking at it, and then he's seeing that it looks like a second sun. Because one, if it's very far away, it'll look like a star, but as it gets closer, it'll look more and more like a sun. The whole region vibrated as the radiance increased. Arjuna realized that this was Indra's chariot descending to earth. The chariot was huge, and it was drawn by 10,000 celestial horses of greenish and golden hue. Matali, in golden armor, was holding the reins. As the chariot approached, Arjuna could see upon it innumerable swords and maces, as well as all kinds of missiles. Axes, darts, lances, and spears of every kind were placed all around the chariot. Celestial thunderbolts and brilliant lightning bolts glowed from its sides. Huge-bodied, fierce nagas with fiery mouths were seated on the chariot, along with great silver cannons furnished with wheels and capable of sending celestial missiles a vast distance. Right, so they have all the variety of weapons that are there. And so that's the point. The chariot was big enough. It wasn't like an Assyrian chariot or something where it's just this little sort of, it's just big enough for the charioteer to stand. You had the chariot driver, and it was huge, and it was just filled with all the weapons, and, you know, like if you're going to battle, you need thousands and thousands of arrows, so there's place for them, place for all the varieties of weapons you use. So as celestials, they could do these things because of their piety. They had the potency to be able to take care of all these things. Arjuna saw Indra's dark blue flagstaff, the Vajjayanta, standing in the middle of the chariot, as straight as bamboo and as tall as a great palm tree. Then the chariot halted, and Matali stood before Arjuna. Bowing low, he said, "O fortunate one, I have been instructed to take you to Shakta. Your father, encircled by the celestials, rishis, gandharvas, and apsaras, wishes to see you in heaven. Shiva has also ordered me. Ascend this chariot and come to the heavenly regions." Arjuna again bathed for purification, then offered prayers to Mount Mandara. "O King of Mountains, you are the refuge of pious sages seeking heaven. You have sheltered me, and I have lived here happily. I offer you my thanks and bid you farewell." Right? So Arjuna, he came to the mountain. He respects the mountain. Then he's lived there and performed his austerities and met Shiva and all that. And now he's leaving, you know, because he attained what he needed to attain there. And so now he's again respecting the mountain. So he sees Arjuna is always respectful like that. Even at Draupadi Swayamvar, he was respectful to the bow. You know, when he got the chariot, you know, from when they burnt the Kandava forest, he also again, you know, circumambulated the chariot. So you see, he's always respectful. That's the unique thing you see about the Pandavas, that they always have that. Even though they're so powerful, they're always humble and respectful. While you see someone like Duryodhana, as he becomes powerful, he has less and less interest to show any respect to anyone else. With that, okay, Matali led Arjuna to a flight of crystal steps leading up to the chariot, right? So the steps are made of crystal, right? Matali urged the steeds that drew the chariot with the speed of the mind high into the sky. As they enter, so with the speed of mind, because they're so far away, the heavenly planets. So in the speed of mind, you just see it's coming very quickly like this, and very quickly they can go back. As they entered the celestial regions, Arjuna saw thousands of wondrous chariots carrying shining beings of great beauty. He saw kings and warriors who had been slain in battle and had attained effulgent celestial forms. As they moved along the paths of the gods, Arjuna saw siddhas, charnas, rishis, guhyakas, and apsaras. The region glowed with the brilliance born of the ascetic merits of such beings. Right? Because the brilliance is there is because of their asceticism, their merits, the good qualities. So, in other words, effulgence is coming from good qualities, from potency. It's not coming from nothing like that. So, that's why everything's so effulgent, is because they have all these nice pious credits. Amazed, Arjuna inquired into their identities. The charioteer replied, "These are pious persons, O son of Kunti, stationed in their respective spheres," right? Because it mentions they move through their particular paths. So everybody has paths that they move through. Even though it's in space, they still have the paths. Like here, we have roads that we move through. So there in space, they have their roads. And so they move in those respective things. They don't move outside of their ones. "You have seen their shining abodes from the earth as stars in the firmament." So down here we know them as stars. You know, and we'll say all these planets and this and that, you know, like that. But no, these are the pious persons of the heavenly regions. The chariot passed through the gate of Indra's planet, where Arjuna saw Aravata, the great white elephant with four tusks. The elephant resembled Mount Kailash with its four summits. Passing through divine regions meant for pious men, who had performed great sacrifices and asceticism, they arrived at last at Amaravati, Amaravati, Krishna Indra's capital city. Arjuna gazed with wide open eyes at the astonishing city. Flowers from all the seasons bloomed simultaneously, and there were groves of sacred trees, right? Because the idea is that whatever is very nice, that's what's in the heavenly planets. It's the same kind of thing that we have here. It's just, you know, better, that's all. You know, it's just like you have your house, someone has a mansion that's better, and then there's someone else that has better than that. So it's the same concept. It's just nicer, that's all. Fragrant breezes moved along their golden leaves, creating cascades of brilliant light. Right, so the leaves are golden, so when the light goes through it, it you know, as the leaves, they move like this, and the light will be shimmering and things like that. Countless mansions and palaces stretched into the distance. Arjuna saw the famous Nandana gardens in which the gods sported with apsaras. Those who turn their backs in battle can never see this place, Matali said, seeing Arjuna's amazement. Neither can those who are wicked-minded, who have not performed sacrifice, who have not abstained from liquor and meat, who have not bathed in holy rivers, nor given charity to Brahmins, ever reach this abode. Right, so this idea of they have to be much more austere to reach there. Pitri Loka you can get if you're pious, you do your duties and everything nicely and all that. But here you can see is it's even, you know, the aspect of that in battle they're always courageous, you know, they don't touch liquor and meat. These aspects that then they can get to Indra's abode. Because otherwise not so many get there. More you'll see in Pitri Loka and the moon planet and these aspects. Who have not bathed in holy rivers nor given charity to Brahmins, they can ever reach this abode. As they proceeded through the city, Arjuna beheld celestial cars traveling by the occupants' wills. Right? They don't have motors in that. It's just that because of their piety, then the material nature moves it. And so where they will it to go, it'll go. You know, so when their piety is finished, they're not in the heavenly planets anymore. So they don't have to worry that while they're there, the car will run out of, you know, like that. The Gandharvas and Apsaras eulogized Arjuna as he passed. He heard the sound of celestial music and of thousands of conch shells and drums. Arjuna entered Indra's magnificent assembly hall and met with the Sadhyas, Maruts, Vishwadevas, and twin Ashvinis. He saw the Adityas, Vasus, Rudras, and the many royal saints headed by King Dilipa. Narad Rishi was also present along with the Gandharva leader, Tumbaru. After offering his respects to the assembled personalities, Arjuna approached his father, the king of gods. Indra was seated beneath his white umbrella and was being fanned with golden handle and perfumed chamaras. So they're not even just, the chamaras are just, you know, in a nice handle. Then they're in gold handles. And not only that, they're perfumed. So either the chamara itself has a natural fragrance, or they'll put some fragrance. They have some way of putting fragrance. So when you fan with them, then the breeze that they create will have a fragrance to it. Many pure brahmanas praised him with hymns from the Rig and Yajurvedas, and the Gandharvas and Charanas played celestial instruments of all descriptions for his pleasure. Arjuna prostrated himself before Indra, who got down from his throne and embraced him. The thousand-eyed god took Arjuna by the hand and led him back up the flight of golden steps to his bejeweled throne. Indra then had his son sit next to him on the throne, where he shone like a second Indra. With his perfumed hand, Indra affectionately stroked Arjuna's head. Out of love, Indra gently patted and rubbed his arms, which were like golden columns. The deity gazed without satiation at his son's face. Seated together on the throne, Arjuna and Indra appeared like the sun and the moon together in a clear sky. So Arjuna was no less qualified, right? Because we have to remember, he is Narad Narayan Rishi. He's the, you know, the pure devotee, the eternal associate of the Lord. So technically his position is much greater than anyone in the material world. But, you know, so therefore, but, you know, he's playing the role of Arjuna, you know, an earthly king and friend of Krishna. And so then, you know, and he's the son of Indra. And so he will do all his duties very nicely. And we see they shine there like the sun and moon. So it's very, very very, very wonderful sight. So it's not just everybody's going, you know, offering the prayers and all that as you go by, and then they turn, who's this guy? You know, they're not doing that. They know who Arjuna is, and they're praising him because he deserves it. Indra gave Arjuna the celestial sight to perceive Amaravati's divine beauty, because otherwise now he could only see what you can see with earthly vision. Because we have a certain amount that, by the Pramana Chaitanya, by the consciousness coming through the intelligence that deals with the senses, we as humans, we have a certain amount, or everybody, every living entity, has a certain amount of what they can perceive and what they can't. Like you can bring somebody into a room and they can't see anything there. You know, it's just a room. Not that they can't see, it's a room. Someone else can see, oh, this room is this and that and so many things. And, you know, so different people can see different things. Or you have a situation, someone just sees it's a situation, someone else sees it's a business opportunity. So everyone has different pramana chaitanya. And then with that, then that's how then they analyze and do and everything. So you can see it because that's how you think. That's what your nature is. So here, to be able to see on the heavenly level, then that takes a further, qualification like that. So then Indra gives him that qualification. So he saw already before, and it's so amazing. So now he gets how the demigods see it. The city was unimaginably opulent. The Pandava looked around at the numerous effulgent rishis who sat reciting sacred texts from the Vedas. Groups of Gandharvas headed by Tambaru sang hymns and voices which entirely captivated the mind. As they sang, apsaras performed exquisite dances full of gestures and sidelong glances. They shook their breasts and moved with broad hips. So, there, you know, now he can see all the rishis and all what is actually going on. Before, he's able to see some aspects, but now he's able to see a broader aspects, because, you know, if you don't know what's there, you don't know what to look for, right? You know, it's just like, let's say you've never been to a place, you know, in some special place, and by seeing it the first time, you definitely get something, because it's different, it's unique, it's amazing. But now let's say you're educated in what's there in that place. And you, therefore, when you go and now see it from that perspective, then you'll see so much more than you would have seen the first time. So the first time you're amazed. So obviously, Matali made those points. You know, that this place can only be attained by very qualified people. But now he's able to have that perception, you know, just by Indra's grace, like that. And then, so then the rishis are there, you know, making things very auspicious. The Gandharvas headed by Tambaru, then they are singing, you know, the various hymns and all these things like that, you know, because Samaveda and all that is sung, you know, has all those things. And the apsaras, and they're dancing, right? So you have all the gestures of the hands, the feet, you know, everything, the whole abhiman like that. And so they're using all the very nice things to create a very nice, sweet atmosphere. So that's the thing, is you have the sweet aspect, you have the vira, or the, you know, the kshatriya aspect. You have also that aspect of clarity and simplicity. So all these things were going on like that. The celestials offered Arjuna the sacred argya and washed his feet. At Indra's command, Arjuna was then escorted to Indra's palace. Arjuna took up residence there, and Indra instructed him how to use the celestial weapons, and especially the irresistible thunderbolt weapon, Vajra, and Indra's powerful lightning flashes. Although living amid splendor and opulence, Arjuna could not forget his brothers in the forest. They longed to return to them, right? So the association of Vaishnavas is so much better than even the heavenly pleasures. Because he could just go, wow, yeah, this is cool, you know. You can hang out there until it's time to go back for the fight. You know, or, you know, why go back? I can just hang out here. But no, he wants to go back, be with his brothers and family like this. So that shows, it's just the association of Vaishnavas is so much more special.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So then we'll stop here, and then we'll see what happens next with Arjuna and the weapons. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada.